Johnny, I hope you're doing well. Welcome back to the game in T-Town.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be on the line, but you got me curious. What's the big deal that's coming? Now I got to stick around after the show, I guess, and find out.
Well, as a media guy, you always want a confirmation, and so I'm waiting for about three more confirmations because let me just rest assured, it doesn't involve the University of Alabama. So
you said that. I'm still curious.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how about I'll text it to you after the interview. How about that?
All right,
Johnny. It's certainly great to have you part of the game. We're 50 days away from Alabama football. I don't know if it was as hot back in the 70s as you guys were preparing for the season, but what were those off-season workouts like as you sort of approach college football? Do you remember those days?
Yeah, barely. I mean, it's been a long time, but no. I used to wake up until about, maybe 10 years ago, about this time of the year, and with a big knot in my stomach thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not in shape. Oh my gosh, I'm not in shape. And then I realized, well, I don't care anymore. But yeah, it was that time of the year, it was time to get serious and to really come into get your mind right and your body and physically ready. And so you know, if you're an athlete and the season's coming up, you're starting to gear up, even mentally and physically in every way, I think.
Was there a time that you guys would take off? Because it seems like now the athletes that we talk to, they stay in Tuscaloosa, whether they're working on academics or they really do not go back home for the summer. Did you guys return back home for the summer, or did you stay in Tuscaloosa and continue to prepare for the upcoming season?
Well, it was changing some during my era, but I went home the first two off seasons, my sophomore and junior year, but between my freshman sophomore year rather, and then my sophomore and junior year. But before my senior year, they asked me to stay on campus, and I did that. I was able to get a job in Tuscaloosa, which made that doable for me. I needed to, I needed to work and earn some money. So, and I know that a lot of these student athletes need that same kind of thing. They can't live on nothing, and some of their parents can't afford to provide that for them. So I think that's some of those kinds of dynamics are some of the things that are going around with discussions about what to do with, evolving the players' union and that type things. What do you do with student athletes that need to be working just about full-time on their bodies and getting ready for a season? At the same time, they need to be working and, saving money and, skill sets for a job or just having some extra spending money. Those are real considerations for a student athlete. That's real life for them.
Johnny, as I look right now, and I go back, and really we value your opinion, not only the game of college football, but the current discussion that you brought up a couple of minutes ago is a big debate in college football. Should we pay athletes? I mean, should they receive a small stipend? If it's not really want to consider a salary, but should we offer more than just a scholarship to some of these college players?
Well, I've got a lot of emotions. I don't know if I'll verbalize them very well or have enough time to really talk them through, but no, I do not believe the athletes should be considered employees of the university, nor should they across the board receive pay. I think once you open that can of worms, it's really hard to, to police it, and it could go anywhere. But shame on us and these athletic, programs that haven't really thought through the dynamics of what we were just talking about. A student athlete that's on campus, they can't get a job for whatever reasons, mainly because of the seasons coming up and the practice and the conditioning and the rules and all the things that keep him from working. And he doesn't have the money. Shame on us for not having a stipend or some way to make that student feel able just to go to a movie or to buy a burger or get a pair of jeans. And I'm not talking about a lot of money. I'm talking about just some money to walk around with. It was a truth in my day, is the truth, I'm sure, even more probably in this day, that there are some players that that generally, you know, would like to go out. Some that they sit in the room, or they, you know, really don't have the social life that a regular student could have, or a student that, or a life that they could have if they weren't in athletics.
Johnny, I go back to the athletic dorms that you guys lived in here and had a chance to sort of build a little bit of team chemistry. Can you talk about how that did build that team chemistry when you guys had a chance to live with each other as far as within a dorm and to be able to build that bond between your teammates?
Well, the dorm life was bittersweet. It was great. When you're a freshman, you get there, you're going through some really hard stuff. You don't have a lot of time outside of practice. When you are, you're tired, but you're in the dorm. You're in each other's rooms. You're going through the same thing. It's a great time to bond and to make new friends, lifelong friends. And it's great to have upperclassmen there to kind of show you the ropes. There was some intimidation factor there, but not a great deal. It's like any other group where there's seniority, there's some of that flexing of the muscles, but for the most part it was their passing on a tradition that the older players are, and the younger players are learning what the expectations are, and they're making great friends. I will say that by the third season, and for sure the fourth, I would have liked to have had more freedom until I was mature enough. And I think, you know, I think that a good mix would have been nice if you could have had that for maybe 2 years and then moved out of the dorms, and you might have moved in with more players, or you might have, you know, branched out. But I think a combination of that would have been great. But the dorms in their day were great in their own way.
Right now, we're talking with Johnny Musso. He's inside the game here in Tuscaloosa. It's our honor and privilege to get a chance to feature Johnny Musso inside the game. And we're talking about Alabama football with him. Johnny, did you grow up an Alabama fan?
I did. My sister went to Auburn, and she's 10 years older than me. And so she was in Auburn when I was, you know, 10, 11 years old, those ages. And my brothers and I, as best I can recall, pulled for Alabama just because we were brothers and she was older and we were boys, and so we aggravated her as much as we could. But I went to my first football game, and it was an Alabama-Auburn game, and it was in 1961, and we used to listen to those games on the radio, as most people in the state did in those days, and I had a vision of what Leroy Jordan was like, roaming, you know, from sideline to sideline, snapping off people's heads and such. And I got to see him come off the team bus, and we actually snuck in the stadium that day, and we made it in, and my cousins kind of showed me the ropes of how that worked. And they won the game. They were national champions. It was their last game, 61 season. And I took it to heart. From then on, I was in my heart Crimson Tide fan, and you know, really as I matured in sports during those early years, I slowly started to get a clear picture of a goal to one day play there.
So you got your first scholarship offer, and I don't know who that came from, but talk about Coach Bryant recruiting you to the University of Alabama. What was that like?
Coach Bryant didn't recruit a lot, particularly back in that day. I'm sure when he was younger and getting started, he did more personal recruiting. When you're on campus, you'd be walked up to his office, and he would greet you at the door and walk you in, and sometimes he'd ask you to sit down. I think some people just kind of walked through the office and had 2 or 3 minutes with him and walked back out, and then he saw somebody else, and a couple of, you know, I think sometimes you'd be asked to sit down and visit. I don't remember the specifics of that. I do remember the first time I walked through his office and met him. So that was pretty typical. He didn't spend a lot of time on just the average recruit. He did come to our house. I was starting to sway in my I never made a commitment to Alabama early or anything, but I think it was assumed by my family, at least, that that's where I'd go. And Auburn was having a great year recruiting. They had a great year recruiting the year before. They got really early commitments from Pat Sullivan and some other top players in the state. Really, at the very, very first of the football, you know, the high school football season, and with the attempt of really swaying that graduating class that was coming out in the state to really consider Auburn, and that was a consideration for me for sure. And so I think as I kind of teetered a bit, that Coach Bryant called and he came over and spent a night with us at dinner and two or three hours afterwards. And it was really, one of the best visits I've ever, well, it was probably the best visit I ever had with them. I had a couple when I was in school that were really, great visits where I could really talk to him. But that was really a special night for me.
Johnny, I hate to ask you this, and I know that you've got kids and grandkids, and maybe this would be an inappropriate, but did you ever get in Coach Bryant's doghouse?
I don't think so. I would have been had he caught me doing a few things that I snuck around and did. But I was like any other young man that age. I think for the most part, I towed the line, but there were definitely things I did and mistakes I made. So some of that is, just as I say in golf, the rub of the green, the luck of occasion, if you got caught or not. So I don't think I ever got in his doghouse. He made it hard on me like everybody else just to see what you do when the chips, when everything was falling against you. So he stacked the deck against me at practice and really ran you through the gauntlet. But he did that with everyone, and I think that as soon as he understood that you were not going to quit on him, then I don't think he really put you through that anymore. So I think what I went through was absolutely normal to everyone. I never felt like I was in a position to be punished by him.
You played with some great teammates. I wanted you to talk about defensively. You were a great offensive player, a two-time All-American at the University of Alabama. But I want to talk about in practice, going up against that tough defense. How did they make you better as a player?
Well, the harder you practice, the better you're going to play. And if you don't have good competition in practice, it's going to be hard to duplicate what you need to do on Saturday. So that goes hand in hand, I think, as far as preparation. But when it comes to game time, I mean, it's a team sport. I mean, if we don't move the markers two or three times, and the defense can't get rested and coached on the sideline and prepared, then it's going to put a stress on them. And same thing. I remember my sophomore year, we didn't have a great defense, and I remember coming to the sideline, and the Gatorade would hardly reach the end of the bench before we were called out to go on the field again. They scored so quick, it seemed like. So it works both ways. The defense and the offense both have to work together. And particularly in this day and time, when you have when you have this hurry-up offense, going quick, if the offense doesn't keep the ball and make two or three, four first downs, and the defense is coming, back on the field after a long series, they get gassed. So the offense is it's a team game, and having both sides of the ball contribute is vital.
There's talk of Southern California and Alabama hooking back up and having a chance to reunite that helmet game as far as two legends and powers in college football. Southern California, 1970, came to Birmingham, Alabama, defeated the Crimson Tide 42-21. Then we returned the favor, implemented the wishbone in 71, went to their place and beat them 17-10. I'm getting Twitter questions. I'm getting text messages from people. You got to ask Johnny Musso about playing USC, and I'm sure it was experience for one losing to that legendary power, but then also going to their place and winning the following year.
Well, losing's hard, but it was almost worth losing that game to go back out there and beat them the next year. It nobody gave us a chance to win, and it was our opening game. They were the preseason number one pick of the country, and they beat us so bad the year before. And we had the wishbone installed, but nobody knew it was coming out except the players and the coaches. And so, yeah, it was quite a game. It was an unbelievable experience, and it really set the table for what that 71 season. It really was a great season for us, and I think it kind of turned the tide for the 70s. It was a great turnaround for our program.
We are talking right now to Johnny Musso inside the game. The final couple of minutes here, and spend some time. Johnny, as someone that played for Coach Bryant, and we understand Coach Saban has been able to accomplish some pretty unique things here. Do you think it's fair? Not that Coach Saban may never coach to 25 years here at the University of Alabama, but is it fair to put Coach Saban and Coach Bryant in that same conversation?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any question. I would just say it like this: the Alabama football program has never been in better hands. And that didn't say I didn't put him in a category that he doesn't belong in, but he's done as good a job as a person could do in the time he's been at the university. And Coach Bryant, you could say the same exact thing about him. There's no one who could have done a better job, I think, than he did over the time frame he was there. He coached men with a lot of different cultural changes, and he did it with a lot of different rule changes and different eras of the game, and he adjusted. And he won it, you know, regardless of what was going on around as far as the rules and the culture of the society. And Coach Saban's done this, you know, doesn't have the longevity, but what more could you ask of a coach than what he's done? I guess you could say you could win it every year, but on the other hand, you know, you just can't do that. It's not that easy. It would, then other, you know, everybody would be having that kind of success. So I'm a Nick Saban fan myself. I think he's done a wonderful job. And you know, Ryan, what I really think, I don't know Coach that well, but I know Coach Bryant well, at least from what my observation was, and he loved to develop young men. He was a coach, but he also was a teacher, and he wanted at the end of the day to have to introduce into society and in our, you know, young men who had character and discipline and had the tools to succeed in life. And I suspect that at the end of the day, Nick Saban's greatest motivation is player development. I think he loves to recruit players and to analyze the players, to develop the players, and to develop in a full way, not just as a player, but I think as the person. I think he likes to have an impact on young men's lives in a positive way. And so I see a great similarity, at least in my mind. I'm not, you know, I analyze that in my own way. I might be incorrect, but I think that that's pretty correct. I think they're both had a great passion to develop young people for life after football.
Johnny, final question. I talk to people that know you, that people that you're associated with. You were a great football player, a two-time All-American, and I don't spend a lot of time because you're one of the most humbled people that I've ever had a chance to interview, because you go back and you give a lot of that credit back to your coaches and your teammates. But then they always tell me, you know, Johnny Musso is a much better person he was a great football player, but your faith is so important to you, your faith in Jesus Christ. And I just want to talk about that for a couple of minutes and sort of promote our Savior. It's something that we're not ashamed of on this radio program, and it's certainly a struggle. But I go back and sort of look at that. That faith was very important with you, and it still is today.
Well, I appreciate you talking about that. You're right. It's not something that you get asked in a public venue, and it certainly is a little bit outside the political correctness of the times. But my faith is the bedrock of, you know, of my life. It hasn't always been that way. I've really came to know the Lord Jesus in a personal way when I was a young adult after college. But my mother was the most devout person I ever knew. She was a practicing Catholic that went to church 7 days a week. Every day I ever remember of her life, she got up and went to Mass. At 6, 5:30 or 6 o'clock, Monday, you know, to the next Monday. And I saw the impact her faith had on her. She lived a hard life. She raised four kids. My dad died before I was 2 years old, and she had a seventh grade education and never worked more than for minimum wage, and yet she had an inner strength that was solely due to her belief in God, and I believe God provided for her as well. So I got to see some things growing up that impressed me and made just a lifelong impression on my heart about the importance of who God is and what influence He can have on the life when I watched my mom's life. So as I grew up and, you know, I started thinking about things a little more deeply and through the experiences of life. You know, the good Lord made himself clear that He wanted me to follow Him in a different way and wholeheartedly. And so life has been different since I really came to the conclusion that that's the best way to live, to really understand that He's Lord and we're not, and that we need to follow and strive to accomplish His will in our life. And He helps us along the way. And I certainly look back on my life. I see that football and the things that I was able to do in my time there, it really was just a way of preparing me to really understand, you know, His grace and goodness to me. So, I don't know. I'm rambling, but...
Well, I tell you what, it's always great when you can share those personal stories. An Alabama legend like Johnny Musso talking with us here in Tuscaloosa. Johnny, thank you so much. And, hey, look down at your phone here in about 20 seconds. I'll send you what I'm about to talk about. But I'm not going to put you on this air and by no means, okay, because it involves an Auburn quarterback, okay? And so I'm not going to ask you to even say it on the air. I'll shoot you a text message and let you know. Johnny, thank you so much for helping me out here in Tuscaloosa.
You have a great day. And Roll Tide, I hope they're getting ready.
50 days away, West Virginia.
Days, right.